But Barry Forbes is our general manager here at KPFT. But he, occasionally he gets time to do some interviews. And this he interviewed with Michelangelo Cignanelli, the author of Queer in America.
Well, in the book itself, you really broke down what you call the Trinity of the Closet, basically focusing on the media, primarily based in New York, politics based in D.C., and the entertainment industry based in Hollywood. And you also were quite forward in saying that the book is going to be about people trapped in the closet, people who have escaped the closet, and people who are worried about breaking down, who are working to end the tyranny of the closet. What is the closet? What are you striving for?
Well, the closet, I think, is something we're just coming to terms with in the mainstream, having a discussion about in America. And I think the gays in the military issue is probably bringing forth that first discussion of the closet. People thought, you know, my first sentence in the book says that there's a conspiracy to keep everyone in the closet. And people, 6 months ago, some people thought that was completely out to lunch. And when you look now at what Sam Nunn is doing, it is a conspiracy to keep people in the closet. To me, the closet is misunderstood by many heterosexuals, and I think a lot of gay people too. People tend to be taught that the closet is someplace we decided to go into when we got older, and that we have a right to be there, that it's a great little place for us to seek refuge, and that we chose to go there. The truth is that we were forced into the closet as children with no choice, and that we exist there against our will. And that if there's any right we have, it's to be out of the closet, not in it.
A lot of the information that you gathered was most of it was firsthand, some was secondhand or thirdhand. Do you feel comfortable in presenting that as fact in the course of the book?
I think that you have to make your own decisions as a journalist as to what you think is a proper source and what you think is trustworthy information. Sometimes when information is secondhand, for instance, if I decide to use it, it's because I actually have other firsthand information, but perhaps for legal reasons or sourcing reasons, sources not wanting to be even anonymously quoted, you don't bring them forth. But you're confident that the information is true, so you present what sources you do have, even if they might be secondhand or thirdhand, and you leave it to the reader to decide whether or not they think. I mean, I think what I did in a lot of cases was simply present the information, and the attitude was sort of, okay, here's the information, you decide, rather than forcing it and saying, look, this is ironclad, this is exactly what's happening. I think that's the way you have to present that kind of information.
Hmm. How many people did you have working for you or working with you researching the information?
I really worked by myself. I had a couple of interns who did a lot of information gathering with sort of through newspapers, magazines, Nexus, doing Nexus searches, but not as much as I did myself. I mean, I think I spent, you know, enormous amount of time sitting behind a computer doing Nexus searches, and certainly out there interviewing people, it was really just me. I mean, I spent 12 hours a day for a year and a half just doing that.
Mm. In one passage on page 191, you say of right-wing Republican Congressman John Hinson that he railed against homosexuality on the floor of the House. Is that true?
That was what I had read in several accounts when I did some background information on him. And in fact, Deb Price, I believe in the column that she quotes him in, had also written that he had railed against homosexuals on the floor of the House.
But you didn't research that with a congressional record?
No, I did not.
Okay. I just spoke with John last Friday.
And is he saying that that's not true at all?
That's not true at all. In fact, the one time that a gay-related bill came up on the floor, he took a walk. And he's on record for being the entire day as being accounted for, mm-hmm. except for that one vote.
Well, that's an instance, again, where we, as journalists, tend to probably trust too much in other journalists. And I tried to talk to John Hinson. Now, if John Hinson would have spoken to me, I would have known firsthand that John Hinson not only never railed against homosexuals, but would have had the interesting angle that the media now wants to portray him as that, as being a self-loathing homosexual who railed against homosexuals. And I would have had an even more interesting story about the media's homophobia. Again, without him speaking to me, it was difficult for me to know that, and I was going by trusted media reports. Deb Price is a very respected, openly gay reporter, and a lot of the other reports that I had read said that I wish John had spoken to me.
But instead of ignoring the subject, you relied on secondhand information from other journalists.
Right, right.
Okay. In the last section, in the epilogue, you talk about the rising influence of gays and lesbians in high technology. Do you really feel, as you said in the book, that high technology will soon shape the trinity of the closet, the media, politics, entertainment?
I think it is already. In fact, Newsweek this week has a huge story on the front page called Interactive. That's just the name, and it's all about how much of our lives are going to be relying on interactive media, which is Silicon Valley interacting with so many of the other power structures, and with so many gay people in that industry, I think the gay movement is going to benefit from that.
Hmm. The book ends with what you call a queer manifesto. Is that kind of a queer calling to arms?
It is. It's a way for me to tell not just lesbian and gay people out there, but it's directed toward four different groups, all gay people, the religious right, sympathetic straights, and all gay activists. And it's basically my way of saying, you know, I think what we all should focus on is the closet, that too many times we focus on so many other tangential issues, or we have so much infighting. And I think that if we could just drop all that for even, you know, a month, and then we all focused on the closet, we'd get so much done.
Hmm. Do you consider yourself to be homosexual, gay, or queer? And what's the difference?
I think that there are differences in the use of the word, although, to be quite honest, I think in some sense I'm all of those things in one. And I definitely use the word queer, for instance, in that way. I don't apply it just to certain kinds of activists or radicals or people of the younger generation. I interchange it with gay, lesbian, and homosexual. But there are times, of course, when one of those words is better than the others. And I think there are times when each of us is one of those words more than the others. There are times when I'm a homosexual, I think, and there are times when I'm a queer, and there are times when I'm simply just plain old gay. So I think we all have that.
Your first encounter with activism was in 1987, and in the course of 3 years, you rose to national prominence in terms of the outing. How have you grown since that time?
Well, I think I've started to think about reaching a larger group of people and realizing how then strategically to go about that. I felt that back then I was really at a sort of ground zero of an explosion, and that using anger was an incredible tool to get all those people together and to really move people to action who agreed with what I was saying. But now I realize that the larger task of actually changing the minds of people who don't agree, anger does not work in that way. It only alienates. And so I found that, especially in writing this book, the best way to do that is to present logical, clear, rational arguments. And so in a sense, I guess I'm not any less angry as a person, but I think what I am learning is that sometimes I have to temper that in order to reach certain people.
One of the observations you made was that the gay movement is irrevocably twined with the religious right movement, and yet the religious right movement is not motivated by logic, it appears, by emotion. Will logic prevail over emotion?
I think that the logic will prevail over emotion in the public arena. It'll never appeal to those people on the religious right. What I mean by that is that by talking right to them directly on a personal level, or trying to appeal to them, we're wasting our time. What we have to do is really get our message out into the public arena of the larger American public and let them make up the decision. Because for them, logic does overpower emotion, and they will make up their minds. But what we have to do is present the truth and refute every one of the right's arguments, instead of what I think we have a tendency to do is to ignore their arguments, hoping people don't believe them. I don't think that works. I think we have to refute every one of their heinous lies.
Is this book, Queer in America, aimed at people who are homosexual, gay, and queer, or a broader audience?
I think it's aimed at people who are just coming to terms with whether they're homosexual, gay, or queer. I think I really wrote it in the spirit of the people out there who are not the hardcore activists, although they're loving it because they see themselves in the book and they're validated by it, and I think they see their energy out there. But I really was writing it in the vein of the people who are just coming out of the closet, are just being politicized. Maybe the people who've maybe been out for a few years, but they've never really thought about politics. They're just looking at what they are. Am I gay? Am I homosexual? Am I queer? What is this whole queer thing about? What is the closet about? What's going on? I'm trying to reach some people who are asking a lot of questions to give them a lot of answers that I believe might help them.
Michelangelo Signorelli, thank you very much for being us today. The book is called Queer in America, Sex, the Media, and the Closets of Power. For World Radio News, I'm Barry Forbes.